This is FM 2.0 with the Don, Dean, Stormy, and the Grizz. Forever music. Music. Music.
Well, we got the man of the hour.
Yeah.
For 2 hours.
Hey, Neil.
Mr. Neil McCoy. How are you, Neil?
What's up, guys? Y'all are in deep conversation. Man, I hope we don't get like that, or I'm just going to turn the damn thing off.
Oh, we're going to get deep. I got a question for you that might get deep, so...
Okay,
we'll keep it simple.
Are you still have your Pledge of Allegiance streak going?
Yes, sir. Did it this morning for 2,800 and I think 14th day in a row.
Wow.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
2,000? Is that what you just said?
7 years, a little over 7 years and 8 months.
That is great.
I appreciate it, man.
Awesome. That is just awesome.
Somebody's got to love our country, doggone it.
Amen. Yeah,
that's no kidding, man. You know, it's funny because you were coming on. I obviously it's embedded in my brain, but I had it rehearsed just in case you said, "Okay, we're going to do the Pledge of Allegiance first."
That would have been cool. All right, everybody, stand up.
Yeah, look at everybody stand up here and do it. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, well, I'm in when y'all are. I have to find a flag, though. I mean, there's a bunch of them in here.
Yeah, you need a flag. I should get a flag behind me.
Oh, no, don't just do it for me. Shoot, you're good. what a great talent she was. And she, I heard y'all, because I think it's cool that I had a chance to listen to what y'all are talking about and kind of figure out what y'all are doing there. And hearing her talk about Jeffrey Steele, I'm recording a couple of Jeffrey Steele songs right now, and he is absolutely fantastic.
That's cool.
Yeah. You know, yeah. Do you get to pick, like, I know a lot of times the artists get like a bunch of songs put in their lap and then you get to sift through them. Do you still do that? Do you go through like a catalog of songs? How does that work for you now when you're picking out music too?
You know, I've always listened to a whole bunch of songs, just like a lot of artists. It just depends on where you are in your career on how many you listen to, because if you ever earn to where you can get a little say so, then you'll even listen to more. But you know, if you're a young artist and the label's still trying to, kind
yeah,
of
they're telling you.
Yeah, then you just listen to what they tell you to listen to.
Do you ever have songs where, I'll be honest, the demo's horrible. Whoever's singing it's like, oh my God, that's just horrible. And you've got to really focus in to get past that. And you go, wow, if I can get past that voice, this is really good.
I can see the beauty behind it.
I thought exactly the opposite in that, wow, that demo is so good. I don't know that I could even get close to that, because these demos now, you know, they cut these demos with all the A-listers, and they're not only the great music, but some of these guys that are singing these demos, some of the guys singing their own songs are just fantastic. And I've actually stayed away from some demos because I put myself in their shoes and I go back and listen to a song. I said, it can't be done any better than that by anybody. So I'm not going to go in and butcher it. Shoot.
Oh, yeah. When you think about it, like Faith Hill, Trisha Yearwood, they were all demo singers.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Mm-hmm. I had read, it's off topic, but I had read the story of Paul McCartney and To Live and Let Die, that the Bond movie, when he wrote that, it got played to the director, and the director listened to and said, well, okay, well, this is good, but who are we going to get to sing it? Having no idea that was Paul. And they literally had to tell him, you've got like the greatest recording artist in the world singing it right now.
Anyway, he's gone now. He just walked out the door.
Well, you know, one of the big things you've done recently is you cut a song. It's going to come out the 19th. Now, I am a big Little Texas fan. I was, man, the first three albums I wore out when they came out. I've had the honor of having Tim Rushlow on going through songs. And to hear your take on them, I'm excited for. I actually had a clip that I was listening to of the song coming out, and you do a phenomenal job. First Time for Everything is such an amazing song.
It is.
And you put your soul into it.
Well, you know how it even came about. Dwayne and Porter are both from Longview, Texas, where I live. And I used to, Dwayne, he gives me a lot of credit in that he knew that. He said, you're the first one that went from here and went to Nashville and started doing the thing. And he said, so we kind of idolized you. But really, I mowed yards for a living. And Dwayne's grandmother lived across the street from Dwayne and his family. And I'd mow her yard. And then this happened most of the time when Dwayne was too sorry and lazy because he's a musician to do anything, as soon as I got done with his grandmother's yard, they'd say, "Can you come mow ours now? We can't get nothing out of this son of ours." So I'd go over and mow his yard. So I guess if I inspired him to be a good lawn guy, I was good.
How much that, like, the guy from Little Texas and Neil McCoy and Neil's cutting the guy from Little Texas? Is that? Yeah.
Like, in the future,
right? This is amazing. Well, is it Dwayne that said, now I was reading a little thing about, you know, he went to school with you, right? You were in high school in Longview?
Well, no, Dwayne was, he's actually much younger than me. So he may be talking about maybe going to the same school, but I guarantee we didn't go at the same time.
He said, This is what he said. I met Neil when I was a kid in high school in Longview. But what he said was, I heard about this great singer who performed at Canton's Chinese restaurant doing jazz music with only a piano player. And when I first heard him singing Al Jarreau, were you singing Al Jarreau, Neil?
Man, it's kind of crazy. I was a musical snob. And in country music, when I was growing up, that was not what I was going to listen to because it was typical three chord. That's what I thought. Three chords. You know, maybe an octave, one octave range on these people, and they're cheating and drinking. And so I was so far, I was a snob that I wouldn't even listen to country because I thought it is what it is. And then so I was singing when I grew up in high school and then into junior college stuff. I was singing a lot of Al Jarreau, Jeffrey Osborne, Luther Vandross, that kind of stuff.
Wow, R&B.
Because I fancied myself as a real singer. You know, I wasn't going to lower myself and sing that country stuff.
Wow. What song would you do from Al Jarreau? Like, I keep hearing, like, "Some Fly By Night," like the moonlighting song.
Yeah.
I think you did, "Does Anybody Want to Go Waltzing in the Goddamn? Does Anybody Want to Go Dance Upon the Roof?" He was he was just doing cool stuff. I fell in love with his vibe and all those guys. And so I tried to mimic them. And then in 1981, I'm just going to fast forward real quick. I won a contest in Dallas, Texas. And through that contest, I got to meet Charlie Pride. And Charlie took me under his wing and said, "You know, I'd like to work with you. I've got a booking and management company right here in Dallas, and maybe we could book you." And he said, "Why don't you come open shows for me?" And I said, you know, and I'm just coming off of nothing, mowing yards. And I said, "Are you serious?" He said, "Yeah, we can." He said, we'll put you can use my band. We'll get you to open my show, do 20, 25 minutes, and then I'll come out and do my show, and we can get you exposure and get you out there." And it is so much removed from what anybody does. Yet they did it in that day. You know, you'd have two or three acts come in, and they would they'd almost play with a house band. So Charlie said, "You come work with my band." And I did. So I would sell his merchandise. It was the craziest thing. I would sell his merchandise before the shows. And so at county fairs, I would just load up with shirts and 8-tracks and just have them all over me. And I would be out selling. I'd walk in through the crowd selling his stuff. And then about 5 minutes before I was supposed to start, I would just run back and take all my stuff off. And then I'd go out and sing. And I could see people out there going,
"Wait, I just bought a CD from this guy."
That's a vendor guy out there.
Didn't that guy just sell me? Yeah. So, but that's where I got my feet into country music. And I started listening to, again, being a snob, I started listening to the Conaways and the Haggards and George Jones and the Charlie Prides, and hearing those vocal ranges, and I thought, "Oh my gosh, I'm the dumbest person alive."
What was I missing, right?
Wasn't he holding cotton candy like a few minutes ago? Did I just buy cotton candy?
Like, Charlie would give me a pretty good commission. So I'd be out hawking 8-tracks mostly at that time.
8-tracks?
Yeah.
Weren't they the greatest? Not.
I think so.
The worst part was you'd be in the middle of a song. This is the current, anyone that's below like 30 doesn't know this, but an 8-track, you'd get to like your favorite song, like a great song, and in the middle of it, it would fade out, click, and fade back in. And you're like, this is the worst thing that could possibly happen with music.
Oh my gosh, it would just destroy a mood. If you were on a date and you thought you was making, you know, making a little progress. And I just,
Wait a minute, baby.
And then you hear that clip sometimes was so loud, it almost felt like a shotgun at times. If you had your radio turned real loud or the A-track player real loud. And it just scared the bedazzle out of you out the graveyard, which is where I've carried most girls at the cemetery.
You know, and they talk about things that come back like vinyl and cassettes. We'll never see a return of the A-track. I guarantee it. It'll never come back.
The only good thing about it was the sound quality. The sound quality is really good. That's it.
That's it. Which is important. It was in the middle of the song and it faded out. You're like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
I don't know, Don. I think all it takes is a hipster movement to bring it back because they brought back the Polaroid.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah. They're bringing albums back.
And vinyl's coming back. So.
And Morgan Wallen brought the mullet back.
Yeah, the mullet is back, yeah.
That's the impossible right there.
You had talked about some of the singers that you had started off with. Luther. I'm a big fan of Luther. Have you ever thought about covering some Luther?
You know, I know Richard Marx wrote Dance with My Father.
And oh, beautiful one.
It's a fantastic song. And I almost tried to cut it. My father-in-law passed away about 22 years ago. And I cut a track on it. You know, it's hard covering a Luther song now.
I'd love to hear a house is not our home.
Oh, a chair is still a chair. Yeah. Even if there's no one sitting there, but a chair is not a house. Oh. And a house is not a home. Chills. When I climb the stairs and turn the key on, please be there still in love with me. Oh, yeah. Oh,
boy. All right. Very good.
Wow. I literally got chills. I love that song.
Oh, I do too. Oh, what a great song.
Throw money in Neil's hat. He's going to throw it down on the ground right now. Put Neil in his hat.
What he'll sell you an 8-track of it.
Got some Luther out of here today.
Wow. Man, I was Jeffrey Osborne and James Ingram. Oh, my gosh. I just loved them. But because they had those big.
I think you should just put out an R&B album. That would be the coolest thing ever. Neil McCoy does R&B.
It would, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd buy it.
It's like full circle.
Yeah. You can't buy it.
Throw some Brian McKnight in there. Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy, Brian McKnight. One Last Cry. Oh, my gosh.
Talk about a guy with a range.
Oh, stupid.
Yeah.
It was so crazy.
Well, in case anyone lived under a rock and didn't know, obviously Neil McCoy is here. And we were I kind of got sidetracked. No, I didn't. We talked about it with Little Texas. Now, I was going to talk about your new song, the recent song you had, Used Car, which is a beautiful song. I'm going to get to that in a minute. But you, for those that, obviously, again, if you were under a rock, now Wink, you know, that's a song that, obviously, I was watching some live performances you were doing, and it still elicits, like, you were doing Wink in a crowd, and I still hear people going, woo! Do you still get that energy still when you do that song? You must have. How many times have you done it? Like 700 times live, probably now 1,000.
Oh my gosh, no more than that. We average 100 shows a year, and we recorded 30 years ago. I've done a bunch of legions, I can tell you, golly. But it's you know, it's just the thing. It's in me is I try to do the records pretty much like the records. I know people get bored with them, especially once they've had a hit a long time. They get bored when they start messing with them. And I get that, but I don't do it only because I know the people that have come to hear it want to sing along and they want to know where you are in the song. And if you're staggering with your phrasing and doing some different stuff, it just kind of throws them. So I always act like it's my first time to sing it on a stage or performing. I mean, that's just a degree of professionalism that I just grew up with, so keep it that way.
You know, the one thing that I've noticed, you know, I live performances are the greatest. You know, when we went through that little pandemic situation and live shows stopped, you probably missed that feedback, right? When you perform live, those times when you were off. Do you have a whole new appreciation for it now coming out of that?
I do. And you know what I did through that thing? I drive a pickup and I started at pretty much at the start of karaoke or pretty much start of when COVID came out, I started a karaoke show in my pickup cab. I called it karaoke kick and Corona concert is what I started. And I ended up doing 50 something weeks of it. I would come on every Friday night and I would play tracks to my music and other people's tracks, karaoke tracks. And I would sing for an hour and a half and just talk smack and do songs. And it was the craziest thing. We stayed in touch. We ended up selling, I know this is going to be crazy, but over a couple of years, we sold about 4,000 t-shirts.
Wow.
So wow.
It kept us alive. It's close to $100,000 worth of t-shirts.
That's great.
So when everybody else was just laying low, or the real great ones like Jennifer, the good ones were writing because they were creative enough to do that. I wasn't doing that. I just can't sit still long enough. So I was doing a concert, and we had people tuning in all over the country, some from all over the world. Crazy.
That's impressive.
Wow. One thing I wanted to ask you, and I'm going to get into used car. Is there we asked this of Mickey Thomas, and now it's becoming like a question I want to ask all people that have been quite successful. We had Mickey Thomas of Starship on, and I said, is there a song that you recorded, performed, that you felt should have been a hit, but it never made anything? Like Mickey gave us two great examples of songs I didn't know, and we're going to feature those. Do you have one that you felt like should have been bigger and it never really went anywhere?
You know what? Yeah, I've had a couple. One of them was late in my career. Matter of fact, my career was over. And then I started my own record label because I couldn't get anybody else to sign me. I tell people the truth. A lot of these other people say, well, I started my own record label, you know, so it just where I could do my own thing and I just whatever. No one else would sign them either. So that's why they started their own record label. But I had a hit called Billy's Got His Beer Goggles On. It was the first song off of that label. And I thought the song that I was releasing after it was it's called The Last of a Dying Breed. And it was about farmers, ranchers, blue collar workers that I was afraid that some of that stuff was coming to an end and they were depleting and some of them were just going to have an opportunity to continue doing what maybe they'd done with their families for years. And it was called The Last of a Dying Breed. And it was a fantastic song. And I got Nolan Ryan, who's a dear friend of mine, was in the video, and Carl Malone from the Utah Jazz. And I had them, and I had a four-star general, Tommy Franks, who led our attack at the start. He came in, and I had all three of those guys in the video. And it was just a great, great song, and we just never could get it through to radio. But no, I think the record label did a pretty good job with getting me to record songs. I think after a while, they figured out who I was, and I did too. You know, when I signed with Atlantic Records in 1990, I was already 32 years old, and I really still didn't know who I was as an artist. I knew who I was as an entertainer. I've got that down. I'm good at that. But from the records or the songs that may get us out there and to where I can get a bigger audience, I didn't know. So we were just experimenting through some stuff with producers and with songs, and then finally on our third album, No Doubt About It, Barry Beckett came in and produced that thing, and that's when we got on a pretty good roll. We had a couple of hits, three hits on that album, and then we ended up having a few more. And then we got in front of people, and from Charlie Pride telling me years ago when I was working with him, and then what I had learned, he just said, put on a great show every night and be nice to people, treat people nice. And that is why we are still working at I turned 65 back in July, and that is why we're still working and doing 110, 120 shows a year, because we're nice to people. The show is going to be good. And then we're nice to people, the caterers, the stagehands, the volunteers that are driving you around. And it's a pretty simple thing. And I try and relate that same message to some of these young kids that may be pretty full of themselves pretty quick because of the fast success they're having. I try and tell them, you know, when you quit having that success, are the people going to still book you if you're not putting butts in the seats with all these hit records? And the only way that they are is you just better start practicing now to be a nice person.
You know, Neil, that resonated. I was talking with Kenny Aronoff a few weeks back, and I asked him, you know, what is it, what is it that gives you a 40-year, 50-year career? Somebody like Elise Scolar or Waddy Wachtel. And he said, the number one thing, you got to be easy to work with. You got to get along with people. Before anything dealing with talent, it's about getting along with people.
You're exactly right. Because if you don't, in 10 years or 15 years, when that same county fair who's booked shows for 40 or 50 or 100 years is looking for an act, and they've got a budget, they got, and there's, and you're one of the ones in there with two or three other acts that you could get all three of either one of us for the same amount. And they go to their board members and they ask them, you know, everybody, then almost all the time, their board members and people that we came in touch with say, you know, that Neil McCoy is a really nice person. They're easy to work with. They're professional. And then they just say, okay, well, we'll just use him. And so that's how you keep working.
That's good, awesome. Good life advice.
Well, yeah, it is. But I had to learn it from other people, and maybe some of these younger people learn it too.
Well, you're so nice that I saw that Blake on, I don't know if it was X, but posted, he says, hey, I'm leaving The Voice. I want Neil to be my replacement.
Blake, yeah, isn't that crazy? Yeah. We and I would have done a good job. I mean, I really think I would have, not from a
well, the thing is, though, but that's the point, Neil. Like, Blake always comes off as he's the country guy, like hit the buzzer. But because of this R&B groove you got, you know, you're up there and there's John Legend there. You're like, you could give him a run for his money.
You know, you got the R&B. I sure could off Matt, like Blake could. Yeah, but when he did that, I'll give you the quick notes on it. We text back and forth. I sang at his, my band, I played his first reception when he was married to Miranda. So, and we got Reba up and Martina up. Everybody got up and sang with our band. We just had a really smoking band time. And so we've known each other for a long, long time, Blake and I. So I texted him one Tuesday out of the blue and said, hey, I see where you're leaving your seat. You know, put in good work for me. And never heard back from him. And then on Friday, I was fixing, we had an early show, and I was walking on stage, and Blake texted me. He said, well, I did it. So I called him real quick. I said, I'm going to go on stage. What'd you do? He said, I just told him. I thought you should replace me at The Voice. And said, you've got to be kidding me. And I make fun, because I know when he said that, everybody at The Voice got their minions to start looking and say, who is Neil McCoy and what is he talking about? Blake must really be on a good bender on this one, because we don't even know this guy. But he put it out there, and then we kind of took it and ran with it. And I knew I wouldn't get it, but that's okay. I had a lot of fun with it.
No, but it goes back to the being nice and being, I mean, any artist that you worked with has, you know, if I read the comments or past interviews, they just say you're just there. As a matter of fact, you were doing a performance live and Vince Gill introduced you. And Vince Gill said, you're one of the nicest people he's ever met. And that was Vince Gill.
Well, right? He just hadn't met anybody. You know, Vince, who's he met?
Nobody much, right?
Nobody, right?
Obviously not very nice people.
Yeah. Well, let's do this. As we let you again, this has been a great conversation.
I wanted to ask you real quick, how did that drink come up, George Burge? How did that come about?
Ooh, that was George and a couple of his guys had gotten together and wrote. You know, it was just about the exact same melody and song and everything to Wink. And they got together, and we're on the road, and I can't even remember. Ashley, I think maybe his manager at the time, had called me, and we'd met somewhere way back. And he said, I got an artist, George Burge, and he's rewritten the words to Wink. He said, would you be interested in hearing it or coming in singing on something of it? I said, yeah, I'd love to. So I went in and I did the last verse and chorus. And I thought it was fantastic. I thought it would be a big old hit. But then again, I guess it was one of those things where the label wasn't really fixated on making that a single and pushing that. So, but I thought it was really well written and fun.
Yeah, I thought they did a really good job with the lyrics. How they change.
Yeah,
them.
Thanks for even knowing that. Shoot, I appreciate it.
Yeah. Drink. All you got to do is give them that drink. Is that how it goes?
Yeah. It's really clever. It's really clever.
I like that.
Real quick, I want to shout out. I loved Clarissa's comment right there. She needed a good dose of wholesome tonight.
Oh, yeah.
Wholesome. Right here. What a great guy. I needed a good dose of wholesome tonight. Look at that.
Oh, shoot. What a nice thing to say.
You're wholesome, Neil.
Just like the bread.
Well, let's do this. I'm gonna hit mute here because I want to share this while we got you here. you have a song here called Used Car. I wanted to play the intro to this for everyone. I'm going to hit mute. And it's great to share this with the artist here, because then we can talk about it before he sails off into the night. Here we go. So I think I got it all queued up here. This is Used Car. I want you to pay attention to this. Now, memories are always associated with songs, but think about a car for a minute, and that's what this is about. So let's play this here.
We brought our first dog prints home in it. Someone in the Piggly Wiggly parking lot put a dent in it. I used it to learn to drive and catch all the pretty girls' eyes on Friday nights. We took advantage of the $10 a carload and squeezed 13 people in it at the drive-in picture show. Used for homecoming parades, it knew every road that wasn't paved, and it was U.S. made. I drive a used car, used for real life, seen a few miles like it's got its own heart. Used for good times, saw some blue lights when I'm asked about my ride. Yeah, buddy,
it's what a beautiful song. Let me get everyone back in here. You know, I talk about music as a memory, homes, certain sense, but you never think about the car. And, you know, I just want to say one time I saw this video of a son, you know, the dad sold the car when he was born, kind of like a similar story, like with my dad.
Oh yeah.
This guy was able to track down the car that his dad sold. And there's a scene where he pulls into the driveway and brings his dad outside. His dad basically drops to his knees almost.
I've seen that. Yeah.
And I get emotional because I imagine, but see, that's exactly what this song is about. All those memories tied to a car. Is that what gravitated you to that song?
It is. That's my first song I've ever written. It's a single. So I was really excited.
That was your own song.
And that was all that, and on into the end of the song is all stuff that happened to me. I worked at Piggly Wiggly, and we did bring our dog Prince home in it. It was first, so they're all stuff I got with Bobby Chamberlain, and we got together, and I told him, I said, Bobby, I got a song idea, and he started talking to me, and I said, and I do some advertising down here in Northeast Texas where I live for automobile dealerships, and they all sell pre-owned vehicles. And I said, I didn't drive a pre-owned vehicle. I drove a used car. It got down from my dad to my brother to my sister and then to me. And I said, I just want to tell people what I used it for, because I think those memories would, everybody had their own car, their used car, and it had such great memories in it. So that's what we got together, and it ended up being a pretty good song. Thank you for even playing it. Now, and I hope Dwayne and everybody else that is not mad at me, because we're not talking about first time for everything, but
well, that's fine, because we got a minute. I was going to play a clip of that, if you don't mind.
Yeah, no, yes, sir. Yes, sir. I didn't.
Because you're still, can you stay for a little bit, like a few more minutes?
Sure. I don't want to get y'all in trouble, though.
No, you won't get us in trouble. No. You're Neil McCoy. How are you going to get us in trouble?
Yeah.
It's more going to be touching you, man.
I just want to say real quick, that song definitely resonated with me. My first car was an 81 Plymouth Champ with a cassette deck that eight tapes, and it was still a big deal for me.
Yeah, mine had a hole in the floor, and it would the water or whatever rain it would come up and get into the radio and short it out. So I'll never forget that car.
Right,
1978 Chevy Nova.
That's a great car.
That's a great car.
I had five of them.
Yeah, I got to ride in a couple of them.
Yeah, we took it to Florida, me and Don.
Yeah, we did.
And speedometer didn't work. Or no, it was the odometer.
The power steering. The car had no power steering. And I'm like, I'm not driving this.
No air conditioning in Florida. It was wonderful. But we'll never forget it.
Awesome. But as you said, you know, I mentioned it earlier about first time for everything. And anybody that doesn't know the Little Texas version.
Yeah.
And I was a big Little Texas guy. I can keep Grizz and I know we would listen to them all the time.
Yeah.
The harmonies alone, which is another story.
Oh, yeah.
But what you bring to this song, you bring your own thing to it. can you see the comments when I post them like this, Neil? Can you see that on the screen?
Neil, I'm just saying.
It's true. Bev knows.
Well, yes. She's a smart lady.
Yeah, she is a smart lady.
I could sing the phone book, but I don't think I could get anybody to buy it, so I need to sing something else.
Yeah, so that is just awesome. Let me do this. Let me hit mute again, and then we'll let you go into the night. But you're absolutely right. I want to play a little bit of First Time for Everything. It's just a clip, but I wanted to just get people excited for this release because it's such a great take on the song. So I'm going to hit mute. Again, this is First Time for Everything. Anybody that's a Little Texas fan will know this song, but I want you to hear his take on it. I love this.
I don't stay out all night. I don't close down the bars. And I don't make a fool of myself. Well, I don't drink. The first time for everything since you said goodbye. It's not much of anything that I haven't tried to somehow get over you. There's no telling.
Baby, it's out there. So that is the song. The 19th. Oh, it's today. Is it released today? Was it today that it got released? 19th, is it? Am I wrong?
I think it's the 29th.
20. You got our echo on there, buddy.
I know. I fixed it.
There you go.
There we go. 29. 10 more days, people. You can go get that song.
Yeah. Pre-sale, pre-aid.
See, when you got to the chorus, the harmonies.
I was just gonna say that.
Is Dwayne and them on the harmonies there with you?
I think Dwayne may be singing on a little bit. I never even asked him when he once I got my vocal down, he sent it to me to make sure I was good with it, and then he said we're going to put the harmonies on, but he didn't say if it was going to be them or if they were getting session singers. I don't know.
Well, everybody's good. Now, will you, when you start doing live shows, are you going to pull that one out?
Yes, sir. We're starting to learn it right now. Yeah.
Yeehaw.
That's right.
If, if I'm there, hey, by the way, you've played the Stockyard. I live in Tampa area in Holiday,
Florida. Oh, yes, sir. We sure.
So if you come back to the Stockyard, I will jump up on stage. Like, I'll be one of those people that crash the stage, and I'll sing it with you.
Hey, well, hang on just a second. My road manager just leaned over and said, we're playing there December the 8th.
Really?
All right. Yeah. So there you
see, and you see my face. So when I'm up front.
Yeah, I'm the redhead guy.
You know, you're up singing. Don't worry.
All right. me. I'll work on it.
Okay.
Yeah,
we got to get that on video.
This was an absolute honor to have you, Neil. Thank you for taking time out of your life to be here, man.
Yes, sir. I know I talk a lot. I'm sorry.
It's been a pleasure.
It's an honor.
Okay. Okay.
Anytime. When you got new music out, we want you back. So please.
All right. That's a deal. I thank you for your time, guys.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Neil McCoy, everybody.
See you, babe.
Thank you, man.
Good night.